Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
Are we ready for the next pandemic?
I think, unfortunately, the answer is no. And I'm leaning into hope that now is the time to have the conversation to make that answer a yes.
That is Dr. Sandro Galea, Dean of Boston University's School of Public Health. And it may be seen crazy to ponder the next pandemic when we are still in the middle of one. But for Dr. Galea and other public health leaders, it is exactly the type of question we need to be asking now. In his new book, The Contagion Next Time, Dr. Galea takes stock of the world's health before COVID-19 and where we are now as we look to future threats. His conclusion? Health is not an individual problem, it's collective. And poor collective health has worldwide implications. We spoke with Dr. Galea earlier today and started by exploring another public health example, big tobacco, and how loosening its hold on the U.S. could be a model for stopping the next pandemic.
I think the central lesson of the tobacco story is that to achieve real change and real transformative change to improve our health, we need to change our conversation. Tobacco was cool. Tobacco was what everybody did. It was ubiquitous. Essentially, all adults were smoking, and it was inconceivable that it was doing anything wrong. There was a Surgeon General's report. There were growing public opinion shifts. There were influencers who spoke about it. And it took decades, really, to shift the public conversation away from tobacco being a cool, ubiquitous something into something that is dangerous, that one would have to think twice about actually smoking combustible cigarettes. So I think the lesson there is that fundamentally, this is about changing how we talk. And in part, what I'm trying to do with the book is to shift our conversation to recognize that there are some foundational changes we need to make to be ready for the next pandemic.
And that's why we're not ready, right? There are some foundational issues. And you talk about those in terms of ensuring health. And we are not ensuring health.
That's correct. And the book builds on observations that have long predated COVID-19. So you and I have spoken before on the show. And I have argued for years, really, and many have as well, that we as a country are not as healthy as we should be. In fact, we live shorter and sicker lives than our other high-income country peers, which should not be the case because we spend more on health than they all do. So the question is, why is that? Well, the reason that we spend more but get less health out of it is because we invest consistently only in medicines and therapeutics, which are really sick care. But we do not invest in health. Investing in health means investing in the air we breathe, the water we drink, the food we eat, the parks around us that allow us to exercise, having safe, affordable housing, having the livable wages, being in a society that's free of violence, free of racism, free of sexism. Those are the elements that fundamentally create our health. And the mistake we make is we invest in treatments that can restore us to health once we are already sick. Now, this should not be mistaken. I'm all for treatments. I'm all for investing in treatment so that when we're sick, we can get back to health. But I actually think we all would rather not be sick to begin with. And it is not being sick to begin with that then makes for a healthy society that is more resilient when a pandemic hits.
Does that mean shifting to a prevention culture?
It does. It does. And, you know, in the book, I use the metaphor of firefighting, which perhaps is helpful here. So fire departments were started thousands of years ago to help fight fires. But about 50 years ago in North America and in other countries, fire departments started realizing that perhaps they could play a role in preventing fires from happening. So fire departments started playing a role in inspecting buildings and helping fire codes. And as a result, over the past 50 years, we've reduced fires in North America by more than a half as to what they were. Now, we still have fire departments because every once in a while we still have fires. But I think we can all agree that we are in a better world because we have fewer fires. And I think the fire departments have been admirable in playing that role in both preventing fires, but also continuing to be ready in case fires happen. And I think that metaphor should apply to our health. We would rather be healthy for as long as possible. We want to have doctors and nurses to look after us if we get sick, but fundamentally, we would rather not get sick to begin with.
So I experienced the book in two halves, Dr. Galea. The first half sort of being, here are what the systemic issues are that are preventing us from achieving health. And then sort of the second half being much more, now let's look at how we handled COVID-19. I want to stay in the first half for just a second longer. And you have been on the show enough that I feel like I can say this to you. At some point in the first half, Dr. Galea, I felt like saying, well, he just says fix all the things, right?
Yes.
Fix climate and racism and economic inequality. And I'm an optimist, but that feels overwhelming.
It does, and I appreciate that, and I'm glad you're saying that. And sometimes I'm asked, okay, well, which one of the things should we fix? And my answer to that is a very pragmatic answer, which is any of these things are a good thing, and we should fix whichever ones we can, whichever pragmatic levers we can, whenever we can. It is ultimately going to be through a patchwork of solutions that we get slowly, slowly to a better world. And I think if there are X, let's say 100 things to be fixed, fixing five is better than fixing none. And I do lean into optimism. We are heading in the direction of fixing a few of these. We are seeing shifts in how we have approached COVID-19. But COVID-19 came at a moment when we were really not far along enough in that journey. And fundamentally, through having these conversations, through shifting how we talk about health, we will get to a place where the things to be fixed are actually a whole different set of things 50 years from now than they are now.
So which levers have the greatest potential right now?
Well, it depends on the time scale that we're looking at. But I think right now we are seeing in our society this wholesale reckoning with issues of deeply seated racial injustice, for example, that really of a scale that we have not experienced in the past 50 years. And I think that creates an opportunity to say, what should we be implementing to level a playing field that has long been not level? How can we make sure that people of color have the same opportunities as everybody else? And I think just that, stands to rectify challenges that have been with us for a long time. And we saw this in the pandemic, right? We know that Black Americans died at 2 times the rate of white Americans. Now, why did that happen? That happened for 2 reasons. Number one is Black Americans are disproportionately in low-wage jobs, and people in low-wage jobs were exposed to the pandemic, could not protect themselves. As a result, they got COVID at a higher rate. And secondly, Black Americans had a greater burden of underlying morbidity, hypertension, diabetes, which reflects decades of poor health due to decades of marginalization. So those two are things that we should change. We should be shifting economic structures so that the next pandemic hits, we're protecting everybody, not just people with high wage jobs, number one. Number two, we should be making the effort to make sure that the color of our skin is not differentially linked with our risk for hypertension and diabetes. And those are specific efforts we can take, which if the next pandemic hits and we've taken care of that, we will no longer have a black-white gap in morbidity or mortality from that pandemic.
And the next pandemic, the contagion itself is going to hit. The question is whether it becomes a pandemic, right?
That's correct. That's correct. And I argue in the book that we were sitting ducks for this pandemic, that we as a country that had unnecessary burden of preventable illness and as a country that had disinvested in public health infrastructure, essentially, we were a little bit like dry tinder, right? You light a match and it becomes a forest fire. We want to be in a place where we can actually readily contain the next virus so it does not become an epidemic in the country.
All right, let's stay with the fire we're in now, which was kind of how I saw the second half of the book. You talk a lot about what we didn't know in the early days. A couple of times, one of the things that you sort of drag me back into the past with is the disinfecting groceries, right? Because we don't know how this thing spreads. In that time when we just didn't know, we heavily prioritized stopping the spread of disease mitigation. But then you really speak strongly about our failure to recognize the need to preserve health as we came to understand more about the disease, that we stayed in disease mitigation at the expense of health. Is that a fair summary? And can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I think so. And I appreciate your characterizing the book. I agree with you. The first half almost could exist before COVID. And the second half is really about COVID. You know, I give us a complete pass about decisions made in March, April, May of 2020. It was a new disease. There was really chaos and fear. And we did things, and that's fine. It was a time of emergency. But pretty soon after that, we understood what we needed to do to actually promote health, to protect ourselves. We understood that the people at risk were people over age 65, people with underlying health conditions. We understood that children were quite a bit less likely to actually get COVID or to transmit COVID or to get sick from COVID. But we were not nimble enough to translate that understanding into efforts to preserve our health while also to protect our society's functioning so that we can remain healthy in the long term. For example, our continued school closures reflected a slowness on our part to adapt and to realize that there was a real consequence to keeping schools closed, because kids' learning, kids' educational development, kids' social emotional development is perhaps the biggest predictor of the kids being healthy when they're adults. So by us keeping schools closed means we were potentially sacrificing health achievement in the future. We also did not move fast enough to protect the elderly, who were really the group which was at high risk, while also allowing more flexibility for people who were much less vulnerable to continue operating in jobs that we wanted to keep, to preserve, to keep the economy going. There are many reasons for this, of course. And in large part, what happened was, if we all remember 2020, all of this got politicized. And actually, politicized is probably not the right word. It's probably more like partisanized. These became red versus blue arguments. And these should never have become red versus blue arguments. These are arguments of science and also of politics. And by politics, I mean little p politics, which means how we weight the decisions we make, taking into account the pros and the cons of very difficult decisions. And we did not have the nuance to do that because everything was seen through a red or a blue lens. That if I said, well, let's think about this, somebody would say, well, you are being red. Or if you said we should do this, somebody would say you're being blue. And that was a real mistake that colored through red and blue lenses everything that happened during COVID. And we should do better next time.
I wonder if conflicting and evolving public health messages, if our slowness, as you say, to respond to the health implications of the steps we took early on and to adapt, didn't exacerbate that to some extent and reduce trust in public health messaging, public health policy suggestions. Is there accountability there that we need to address?
I think there is. I think we need to be always very, very careful to recognize that anybody who was in a position of authority making decisions was under extreme duress and was just a difficult time. So I have abundant sympathy for decision makers at all levels in public health and outside public health. Having said that, I think this is a moment for careful thought and reflection to say, what did we do? What do we learn from it? What can we do better? You know, nothing redeems the tragedy that was COVID. 700,000 lives lost is a real tragedy. COVID became the third leading cause of death in 2020. But we certainly would deepen the tragedy if we do not learn from what has happened. So what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to push us to start learning, to start asking ourselves, what did we do? What can we do differently? Not for the sake of sort of finger pointing, but really for the sake of moving to a better place.
You just said that this is a moment for careful thought and reflection. On this day, we are also in the middle of a truly historic election in the city of Boston. And on November 16th, a new mayor will be sworn in. And that mayor will pick up responsibility for the pandemic we're living in now. What would you advise her in those early days?
I think the new mayor, her task will be to say, how do we close health gaps? How do we make sure that what we do does not further disadvantage those who are already marginalized? And in part, that's a lot of what happened during this pandemic response, right? We took very broad, blunt approaches that rather than narrow health gaps, they widened health gaps. And that should never be what we do. And it requires careful thought to avoid doing that.
Last question for you, Dr. Galea. Is this a moment for social healing? And how do we do that?
I can think of nothing more important right now than bringing us together, than stopping the divisions that really have characterized the public conversation since about 2015. In 2015, we saw the ascent of a populist sentiment on the right and on the left that really divided the country, which of course sowed mistrust, which then became some of the consequences we saw with hesitancy around vaccines. So it does seem to me like fundamentally, in order for us to see health as a public good, something that we strive for together, we need to be willing to have conversations with one another. We need to be willing to say blue needs to talk to red and red needs to talk to blue, and recognize that all of us fundamentally aspire to better health for our children. And to do that, it requires asking honestly the question, what kind of world will do that? What kind of world will generate health for you, for me, and for our kids? And that is a nonpartisan issue.
That is Dr. Sandra Galea, epidemiologist and dean of Boston University's School of Public Health. The book is The Contagion Next Time. Dr. Galea, thank you.
Thank you again.